time for the Jason Aaron Manifest. Sit down, grab a drink. We go in 3, 2.
What's up, guys? Episode Trace, costume design with Samantha Custer. She is a costume designer out of LA, and on this episode, we talk about how she got into this business, what it's even about. I know I have never understood costume design or set design or those kind of things, and she kind of walks us through it, how she got into it, her background, how she stays working, some really cool projects like Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is on Netflix right now. That's the Kickstarter reboot. And just a really cool conversation. I think the more of these we do, the more I realize that a lot of artists kind of have a lot of the same principles in staying busy, staying working, especially when you're in that freelance world and getting to the next step. So really cool conversation, Samantha Custer, episode number 3, coming at you in a second. Do not forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcast media. It's there, I think. I hope. Episode number 3, here we go. Samantha Custer, welcome to The Manifest.
Thanks, Jay, for having me.
Oh, it is my absolute pleasure. So far, your episode number 3, we've had a director, we've had a drone pilot, and now you are going to tell the world what it is that you do.
I am a costume designer.
Well, that's actually, it's funny because I think the first guy took a minute and a half to tell me. The second guy took also about a minute and a half. So you did it in 2 words. Is it really that simple?
No, it's not. But that's the title of the job, so that's what I do. That's what you asked me.
It's a good answer. I can't blame you. You're making it easy. So in all seriousness, and you and I talked about this offline. For me, coming from a production background, I've kind of done everything from, shooting, directing, producing, been on the audio side, the video side, the post-production, editing, coloring, graphics, motion design. And I kind of have a good feel for exactly how it is one produces and makes media. But there are certain things that I can never understand. And one of them is costume design, and one of them is set design. So I'll have to find the set designer for my next episode, I guess. But I mean, how did you get into it? And you could bleed that into sort of what you do and just where does the mindset come from?
Okay, so we'll start with how I got into costume design. Basically, it sort of happened, I would say, college. I went to undergrad at a small school in Portland called Linfield College, actually McMinnville, Oregon. And while I was there, I was actually studying political science with minors in Spanish and history. Mm. And to kind of break up the monotony of, you know, the papers and the BS, I decided to take an acting class. But while I was in the acting class, I asked them if they had costume design, because I've always been into art and film and designing. I've always been doing that ever since I was a kid. So I asked the professor if I could join the costume design class. He made me do a bunch of drawings to get in because it was only for theater majors, but they let me in eventually. And then took the class, and I fell in love with it. They taught us how to like do the breakdowns and drawings and things like that. And so while I was in there, they told me I should go for an MFA. And I was like, well, what is that? It's a master's of fine arts. You can get into costume design. So I was like, well, that sounds like way more fun than law school, much to my parents' disappointment.
But and so we come from the same boat there.
So I decided after graduation, I was just going to go for it. So I started researching different schools that would do costume design. I looked at Fit 'Em First, but that wasn't really a great fit. And then UCLA actually have a program there. And at the time that I went to school, it was the second best in the country behind Yale. And let's just be real, it's only Yale because it's Yale. So I ended up getting into UCLA and ended up getting a master's degree in costume design. So that's how I got into it. And yeah, now my parents are actually okay with it, because I'm actually doing okay.
So this is interesting.
But at first, it was a struggle.
I mean, how long? So when would you say you knew you really wanted to do this? I mean, was it when you were taking classes in it, or was growing up you kind of knew you wanted to be in television and film? Like, when was it for you?
I would say it was more honed in college. I mean, I knew what I was interested in when I was a kid, but I didn't know that that was actually a thing I could do. You know what I mean? The family that I grew up in, it's like, you know, they wanted professionals like lawyer or normal jobs. And, you know, to go into the arts was something that kind of wasn't really an option. Like I could have, like I wanted to get a degree in art and that got shot down. You know, I had to go be practical or do business and that didn't really work out. So I ended up being in poli sci because I liked government. So to go completely 180 into a different direction was a risk, but I'm glad I did it because it's like, you know, you got to love what you do. And I absolutely do now. And my parents kind of came on board eventually once they saw that I loved it and I was successful and, you know, you could actually make a living doing what I do for a career.
I think living in LA where you are, it's probably pretty normal. You don't have to do much explanation when you tell people you're a costume designer, right?
You'd be surprised. Some people don't really get it. They don't really know. They're like,
so you shop?
I'm like, no, that's so much more than shopping.
Although it's probably a fun part. We'll definitely get into that. But yeah, you're from Portland, right?
I'm from Portland, Oregon. Yeah, I grew up there.
So going back to Portland now, you run into someone, you tell them you're a costume designer. How many heads do they look at you like you have?
They actually, you know, a lot of people who find out that I do costume design think it's really cool. They think it's like, oh, wow, she works with celebrities and it's all glamorous. And, you know, they see that side of the job. Although in reality, it's very far from that. It's like maybe once a year where it's actually glamorous. And that would be like the Costume Designers Guild Awards when you actually get dressed up and do the red carpet and all that jazz. But other than that, like, you know, I don't think they understand what the job is. They just think movies and Hollywood and glitz and glamour and movie stars, like all that kind of stuff.
So this is a union position.
Yes.
How many unions are there?
For costumes, there's the Costume Designers Guild, which is Local 892, which is what I belong to. There's also the Costumers Union, which is 705. And those are basically the supervisors and the people that work on set costumers. So I used to be in that union, but I never worked as a costumer. I've always just been a designer. So I ended up disaffiliating from that union, and I'm just solely in 892. But the great thing about my union is because they're realists and realize that, you know, you need to pay rent. They don't particularly like it if you take non-union jobs, but they're not going to kick you out if you have to. So, you know, I work both union and non-union.
Oh, that's actually pretty, I would say, unique in the, you know, production world that you can kind of go ahead and do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. So, of course, here's the, you know, the $64,000 question. I mean, what do you do? What does a day look like in your life? How much do you travel? What does a costume designer do aside for, you know, going to Target and buying clothes?
Okay, I'll start from the very beginning of production. So basically, let's pretend I get a job.
Yes. Okay. Nothing wrong with that, right?
So what I'll do is I'll go through, actually even pre-getting the job, like when I'm first meeting with the director to get to interview, I'll read the script. I'll kind of put together a presentation or a lookbook of how I see the different characters in the film or television, whatever I'm interviewing for, and kind of put together like a presentation for them. Once I'm hired, it's more like reading the script, breaking it down as far as like, you know, how many different characters, how many days in the script, how many different changes they have, and kind of thinking about their world and their characters, where these people come from, demographics, like everything that goes into creating a character. Meeting with the director or producers, whoever I need to meet with that I'm collaborating with, and then we kind of decide on their look. Basically, like, this is how I see this character. Do you agree? Great. Let's move on. Then once we're into the production, you know, I have a budget that I work with. And depending on what that budget is, I'll either be shopping the show or I'll be designing and having things made. And that doesn't happen as often just because a lot of budgets aren't as big. Like, you know, the big, big movies, like the big budget movies, they'll have a lot of their costumes made, you know, built to order or whatever. But a lot of my characters I create through shopping, just different places, and depends on what it is.
So how much drawing is involved in that?
Not a whole hell of a lot, honestly. You know, you do a lot of, you do drawing, like the most drawing I do is if I'm, say, in a meeting and I want to communicate something really quickly, I'll be like, well, I was kind of thinking about this hat or, you know, this kind of jacket, and I'll sketch it out really quick. You know, we have in our union, we have like the illustrators or concept artists. So if you're working on a big film, you'll work with them and they'll generally like draw out something very beautiful as a presentation to the director or producers or whatever. But in everyday costume design, that's not what you're doing.
So,
you know, unless like you have a lot of time and I can draw, and paint and all of that stuff. But honestly, it's like a lot of times you don't have enough time to do that.
So in theory, you could do your job with absolutely, no background in practical art, I guess. It's possible. Yeah,
it is possible. And there actually have been designers, very large designers in the past that can't sketch. And which is really interesting that have always used other artists to do their sketches for them. So, but I can, it's just a matter of time and budget and, you know, if I could, I would, but generally we don't have that luxury.
So would you say, what percentage of your jobs would you say, because I don't want to divert you here, what percentage of your jobs do you say that you're shopping, and what percentage of your jobs would you say that you're having stuff custom made?
I would say probably about 85% I'm shopping, and then 15% I'm having things made.
So let's jump right into it. The last show that you worked on, tell us a little bit about it, a period piece, but not quite the period that most people would think of right away. You know, what have you been working on?
Well, basically the past year I've been living in the 90s. I've done
nothing wrong with that, by the way. I could live in the 90s, I would, I promise.
I mean, I'm dating myself, but those were my high school years. So, you know, it's a very, it's a decade very near and dear to my heart. So I did my last job that I did. We shot seasons 2 and 3 of a show called Play by Play, which you can see on Go 90. It's basically like the Wonder Years, but set in the 90s. And it follows this kid, Pete Hickey, who's a high school student, kind of navigating his way through, you know, high school, liking girls, playing football, not being athletic, and like kind of finding his way and his family. And it's a really great show. I love it. I'm very proud of it. And yeah, everything's 90s. And this season in particular, season 2 in particular, was really great because I got to have more fun with the costumes. Season 1 was basically in high school, and it's a private high school, so everything's uniforms. Season 2, it's summer break, so I got to go outside the box a little bit and actually explore the period in their clothing.
So this is fun because, I mean, if we were talking about shooting, you know, Gangs of New York, it might be a different conversation. But where do you, I mean, this is to me where I get lost. Where do you start with this? You know, how many people did you have to costume?
You know, there was probably about, I would say, like, 10, well, no, more than 10. Probably like 15 main characters.
And then how many extras?
But, I mean, we probably dressed at least 86.
Wow, a day.
Like, there was, not a day. I mean, throughout the series. I mean, on our biggest days where we had to, like, dress high school students, crowds, I mean, there was, like, hundreds of people.
And you were dressing all the extras as well?
Basically going through, what we did is we kind of guided them, like gave them options. You know, you're also shooting in Iowa where there's not a lot of resources, as far as like being able to pull a bunch of like extra stock. You know, we could only bring so much out from LA. Like I rented a bunch of stuff from Universal, a lot of costumes from Universal, mostly for our main cast. And then what I did was I created like lookbook type tear sheets again to send off to the background, giving them kind of direction like, hey, these are the kind of silhouettes that I need you guys to try to bring options of, do the best you can. And then we kind of could sort of fill in the blanks a little bit. But that's how we kind of managed the background out there and having to dress as many people as we did.
Why did the show film in Iowa?
We shot season 1 out there. It was actually interesting. We shot 2 shows out in Iowa last year. The first one was called Embeds, which was kind of like political, following, you know, the embeds that are in political campaigns, like they kind of report to the news agencies. So we started with that one, and that was, you know, set in Iowa because it's a swing state. And so since we were out there, they decided to shoot their second series, Play by Play, season one out there because we were already there. The whole crew was there. And it was supposed to double for a suburb of Chicago. And there was a really great high school location there, Roosevelt High School, which is amazing. So we ended up just staying out there. And then, of course, seasons two and three got picked up. And so we went back out to Iowa again.
Yeah. So it's not that you're not giving us inside information here. Iowa is not becoming the hotbed of, you know, the next Hollywood. Just coincidental.
And it was coincidental. I mean, I love shooting in Iowa. Ironically, I've actually shot most of my out-of-state films in Iowa. They don't have a tax incentive anymore, but there is some filming done out there.
What about Portland? You ever go back there?
You know, Portland is a hard market to get into. They're very small. They use a lot of the same people. I would love to work in Portland. I would love to go home, but I don't have a big net and big network out there, so... yeah, I haven't been able to break in yet, which is kind of a bummer. I've done a couple commercials out there, but that's about it.
All right, so we're getting sidetracked here because people are dying to know. So we're in the 90s. Where do you?
We're in the 90s.
So you gave us a little bit that you got some stuff from Universal, but I mean, how do you begin to go about researching the period? And I mean, I went to high school in the 90s too. I mean, I kind of remember some of the stuff I wore, but. How does this go? Do you just pull up a bunch of episodes of Saved by the Bell? I mean, what do you do?
You know, I kind of went through, I mean, I did that. Like, you know, I looked at kind of what's popular in the 90s as far as like TV, things like that. But I mean, I also remembered, I looked through yearbooks. I, like a lot of my friends had great pictures from the 90s. And it also helped that right before I did, well, season two, three, I did a reality show called 90s House on MTV. So that was more broad 90s, like Play by Play was set 94. So that was a little more specific. So like my mind was already in the 90s. And, you know, it's a bunch of research, just looking up online and like looking what was popular, the trends, kind of like going through magazines, even just really trying to find what was the real deal. And I also have a really good memory, too. I mean, I remember that was when I was in high school. So, you know, I remember what we were wearing and what we were doing. And I've got all the pictures at home as well. So it wasn't too hard to, like, find that stuff. And then, you know, like I said, I went to Universal. We rented a bunch of stuff from Universal. They have a great 90s department. And then I also looked at things at, like, Etsy. You know, and eBay, like just found specific pieces online that, you know, were special and great for the story.
That's interesting. So where do you go to like to a big, like to Universal first and then narrow down to eBay and Etsy? Like what's the sort of process?
It's kind of everything. I mean, it's everything, you know, go to Universal, do a big pull. I was also fortunate that the 90s house gave me a lot of the clothes that we weren't, you know, they didn't want them. So I was able to take a lot of things from the 90s house with me as well. So that kind of cut some of the work in half a little bit. And then just like in the scripts, for example, they mentioned like BK Knights, you know, the shoes, the high tops. So I found those online because it was very specific. And then I also actually, you know, before I went out to Iowa, I went home to drop off my cats and ended up doing some great vintage shopping up in Portland because Portland has an amazing vintage shopping scene. So I went up there and got a bunch of stuff there too, filled up a whole suitcase and brought it back to Iowa with me.
So from what was 90s House about?
90s House was a competition reality show where the kids, like the contestants showed up. They had to get rid of their cell phones, computers, all of that, and basically live as though they were in the 90s. So in the 90s, you know, we didn't have cell phones.
What about pagers?
Like that.
They had
pagers.
All right, okay.
You know, they didn't have, like, you know, they had to use the VCR. They, you know, it was just like stuff like that where they had to live like they were in the 90s, had to eat like 90s snacks like Gushers and... stuff,
I still eat Gushers, by the way.
I mean, Gushers are really good.
You know, I think they've changed since the olden days.
I'm sure they did. Kind of like fruit roll-ups. Those aren't the same like when we were kids.
Did they have Dunkaroos on set? Do you
yes,
remember
they
those?
Did.
Dunkaroos
they
were
sure
amazing.
Did.
Those were... I mean, in my house growing up, you know, we were only allowed one, like, good snack a day. So, like, Gushers, Dunkaroos, Fruit by the Foot, another classic. Yep. That's amazing. Did you guys get those in Crafty, too? Did they, like, spill over?
Not really, because they only had so much of it, so they kind of kept it for the kids in the house.
Right.
But they did, they were offered up at the end of the shooting.
How old were the contestants?
They're all like millennials, 20 somethings. You know, they kind of range from like, I think 21 to 27.
And how do you win the show?
They had different competitions and, you know, it depended on how they did, how they performed, whether they would go on. And then, you know, once a week they got, you know, eliminated. So it was just like, you know, it's a competition reality show.
So it was like, same. Was it like Real World like, meets reality meets Survivor?
Yeah, kind of like that. But no, but they didn't vote themselves off the island. The the host voted them off.
And when did this show air?
This aired, oh gosh, probably September, I think.
So is there a season two in this show's future?
I don't know. Have not heard. I'll be honest, reality is not exactly my thing. I prefer doing features in television.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I feel like, I think it's very interesting when you think reality, I think the last thing you'd think of would be a costume designer because it's reality. I mean, does the Survivor have a costume designer? Like,
I think they have, most reality shows have stylists, but I don't identify myself as a stylist. Like, I can do styling, but it's not my thing. I mean, I create characters. Like, I'm a costume designer.
So would you say that show is like so niche just because even though it's reality, they were trying to set it in a period? I mean, so that's definitely not the norm.
No, it's not the norm. I mean, that is the reason why I came into that show as a costume designer, because it was 90s. And I mean, and I wasn't dressing the kids every day. Like, I would gently suggest things so that they were actually period correct. But my job on the 90s house was to build this massive closet up with clothes, like make sure it was all correct, like 90s. And then I also dressed the hosts. So we had Leonce Bass and Christina Milian. And so I dressed them, you know, every week as well. But yeah, and the other thing is, too, the reason why I came on as a costume designer on the 90s house is because it was a union show. And this production company that I worked with, they have their in-house stylist who was not union. So she couldn't technically work on the show. So they had to branch out and then hire me.
That's interesting. Well, we also have a Christina Milian connection because I was on Say What Karaoke in the year 2000, just outside the 90s. And she was a judge on my show, on one of my shows. Yes.
So she's a sweetheart.
We now share a Christina Milian connection. who
she's
knew?
Really great. She is really great.
Who knew? That's very interesting to have a costume designer in a period show. Now, you said they gave you the stuff because they didn't want it. So is this in like your personal library of clothes now?
No, those would be no. I do have a storage unit of things, like costume things that I kind of keep, like stuff that I reuse, like, you know, uniforms, nurses, you know, all that kind of stuff. But no, the clothes that we used from the 90s house that were also used in Play-by-Play are right now in a storage unit in Des Moines.
And who owns those now?
I gifted those to Play-by-Play.
That's so interesting because when I worked on the Back to the Future documentary, one of the biggest things about that is a lot of the memorabilia from the movie. In fact, there are literally hardcover books. You know, this thick, I'm making a, you know, inch and a half, 2-inch thick books that every page details a set piece or a costume or something like that. And these things go for, I mean, some of them are worth thousands. You know, you always see these Elvis costumes or whatever. And this happens in movies because so many of these things become throwaways and you don't think they're worth anything. Next thing you know, something becomes this massive pop culture icon project, and then, you know, depending on who wore it or whatever, these things become super valuable. I mean, do you ever think about that stuff? Like, has there been anything you ever worked on where you said, I should probably maybe grab that shirt for my own little cut?
Generally, no. I mean, I know that there are some things that would probably could be valuable as far as, but I mean, you know, honestly, it's like the stuff belongs to production. So I never unless they give it to me, like, hey, Sam, we're not going to use this. You take whatever you want for your stock or whatever. I mean, everything gets boxed up and inventoried and goes into storage just in case there's reshoots. So I don't really, yeah. I mean, I know that there's some things that are probably valuable for production or like a resale or memorabilia, but I normally don't have it.
Well, I was looking for that fun story about the time that, you know, you you took, like, you know, Kevin Klein's, you know, I don't know, bracelet or something, and now you have it on your mantle. Nothing, huh? Zero?
Well, okay, I will say this. I do have a dress, a wedding dress that I put on Sofia Vergara in that movie The Female Brain, in my storage unit, my personal storage unit. But the only reason why I have that dress is because it didn't belong to production. It belonged to me first. Wow. And I let them use it. I let them use it for the movie. But I put Sofia Vergara in this wedding dress. It was like a really quick thing. And I still have that wedding dress. And the reason why I have that wedding dress is because I used to do all the eHarmony commercials. So eHarmony was very generous. And basically on the commercials, they didn't want to keep anything. They let me keep it. And I was like, well, wedding dresses are a good thing to have.
Wow.
So I have that.
So now that's the second person you brought up that we have a connection to, because she and I were on a flight together from Boston to from LA to Boston. So I don't know if it's quite the same you have like real connections with these people. I'm like, we were on a plane together this one time and I was in the back. That's very funny. So how many clothes, I mean, how much stuff would you say that you personally have like collected? You have a storage unit now. So I mean, what's,
yeah,
how much are we talking about?
I mean, I've got a 5x10 storage unit and it's pretty full. I actually just got rid of a bunch of stuff too, and it's still full.
And when you get rid of this stuff, do you sell it to other designers, or I mean,
no.
What do you do?
Take it to Goodwill.
Really?
Or Salvation Army, or, you know, I mean, it just depends on the stuff that I'm getting rid of. You know what I mean? Like, I did get rid of a bunch of kind of 70s clothes, and I took them just to not Jet Rag, but like American Vintage kind of stores, just because I was like, you know, I'm not using this. You guys can probably use it, resell it. I also don't, like, you know, I probably could, if I really wanted to, set up like an Etsy shop or something like that, but I just don't have the time for it.
So that's not so something you think about, like, kind of amassing your own sort of, because I know prop guys do that, right? They kind of,
yeah,
they end up with their own just trucks full of stuff, and then they become the go-to guy for whatever. That's not in the cards for you.
No, that's not really. I mean, there's some specific people that will have, like, police uniforms, and like that's, they can rent from their personal stock or whatever, but that's not what I'm really interested in doing.
All right, coolest show or film you've ever worked on? You should have known I was gonna put you on the spot for this one.
I honestly don't have a favorite thing that I've ever worked on, because they're all special and unique.
Oh, that's so nice.
Every project, there's been, like, I mean, there's been good ones, there's been bad ones, as far as like challenging and, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I like ones that stand out to me that I really enjoyed creatively. Like, I did a movie called Medicine Men, which is not out in the world yet. I'm not sure when it's going to be out in the world, but it was like an 1860s Western.
Wow.
And I'd always wanted to do a Western, and it's period, obviously. So like, that is like, I love that stuff. I love doing period pieces. That's my favorite thing to do. But I mean, I will say I'm very proud of Play-by-Play. Like, that's an amazing experience every season. And, you know, we've shot 3 seasons. One of the shows that like people would know me from, possibly, that has actually opened up a lot of doors for me is Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, which is on Netflix right now. That's a great show. What I liked about doing that show is that it was completely fan driven. You know, the fans raised almost $6 million on Kickstarter to bring that show back. And so to be a part of kind of like that legacy was really cool. And the fact that Joel, you know, Hushin, the creator, trusted me to kind of like, you know, maintain his characters that are so beloved while introducing new characters to the world. You know, that was awesome. And
how big was your department on that?
You know, the department wasn't very big. It wasn't big. It was probably like four, me and like three others on a good day. But it was fine. You know, we made it work, and it was a fun show, and I got to work with some really great people. And I, because of that, I got to be a panelist at Comic-Con for my guild, which is pretty sweet, in San Diego. So that was fun.
We have that in common, too.
Oh, were you a panelist at Comic-Con?
Yeah, for real, though, this time. I went to Comic-Con in San Diego once. No, that is not. Yes, I was. Well, the year that our film came out, we did the entire Comic-Con circuit. We did WonderCon in Anaheim, San Diego Comic-Con. We did Chicago. We did London Film and Comic-Con, which was amazing.
Ew.
New York Comic-Con. So we hit them all the biggies, to the point that after 2015, I swore that I would never be caught dead at a Comic-Con again. And gifted to me by my lovely girlfriend were two tickets to Comic-Con about, I guess, 3 weeks ago. So it was my first return to Comic-Con since my documentary came out. And listen, I love that like world, but you know, once you've seen 8 Comic-Cons, you've seen them all. And when you go to San Diego, you can't top that. It's so big and massive that, you know, going to the Nassau Coliseum here to see a Comic-Con, it just doesn't have the same sort of, you know, excitement and pizzazz to it.
Yeah, Comic-Con was intense. The amount of people that were there was insane, but it was also, it was kind of thrilling and really cool and a different world than I'm used to being in for sure. But it was also kind of trippy, like when you're walking through the hall and then you see people dressed in costumes inspired by your designs. And I'm like, that was pretty sweet.
What was your panel on?
It was on costume design and film and television.
Any highlights that you could share?
Well, I was up there. It was actually really great. I was up there with some really big designers. It was pretty sweet. Like, we had the gal from Stranger Things. She was up there. Marlene Stewart, who started off with Madonna back in the day.
Wow.
And has done big things like Oblivion and like a bunch of other Tom Cruise movies. And then the gal, Ruth Carter, who did Black Panther, she was also on my panel. So, I mean, it was a great kind of sampling of different designers who do different things, you know. I mean, I would say, you know, I'm definitely not at that $100 million budget level, but, you know, I represent kind of more of the indies, the indie movies and things like that. So they got a good perspective from different budget level type designers.
So I definitely don't want to forget. I mean, when you're dressing people, because I guess one of my questions was, what's the oldest period you've ever done? I guess 1860s Western is probably wins that award.
Yeah, I'd say that.
I mean, where do you begin with that?
A lot of research. I mean, that's like one of my favorite things to do is research. I mean, obviously, I was a history, you know, I had a history minor. So I've always been into history and researching it. And like, you know, when you're doing period, you want it to be as accurate as possible. You know, there's some shows that like kind of take liberties with silhouette and whatever, but when I'm doing a movie or a TV show that's period, I like it to be as correct as I can make it. So that starts with the research, books, you know, internet searches. I mean, everything. First primary resource primary sources are always the way to go. So like books, actual books, but internet's good too.
And then, so you do your research, you're doing 1860s. Where do you go? Is this also film lots, costume departments? I mean, how does...
For that particular show, I rented from Western Costume, but, you know, there's another great costume house in town called United American Costume that has a lot of, you know, 1800s period, everything. It's great.
Now, did they have people there who were sort of experts on the period so you can walk in and say, you know, I need this decade from the 1800s, mm-hmm. this decade from the 1800s. I mean, are there sort of gurus on that stuff in these types of places?
Yeah, I would say yes. There's, you know, they're very knowledgeable at these places because they're in it every day. Like, they know the stock, they're putting it away, they're cataloging it. They also have, a lot of these costume houses have research, like libraries themselves. So they can be very helpful. But, you know, they're also very busy. So as a designer, when you're trying to pull the stuff, it's best that you actually take initiative, do your research, and then go in there. And, you know, if you need help, they're there, but you don't necessarily need to, or I didn't need to anyway.
So I think a big theme of this show, just talking to people from all over the entertainment and production world, just talking to a lot of artists, is figuring out, you know, because I think that what you were talking about earlier with your background, it's not unique. It's not, it's certainly not for me, where you come from a family where it's like, listen, art's nice, but yeah, how are you going to make a living, you know? And
exactly.
There are three kids in my family, I guess. None of us are kids anymore, unfortunately. But of the three of us, I mean, I direct, and my sister is an artist. And unlike me, she was so good that as the youngest, she was actually pushed into art. I mean, it was encouraged that she go to college. She has a fine art degree. You know, she makes these massive paintings and stuff like that. And the irony is that she has the fine arts degree and does not have a full-time job as an artist. She works at a high school as sort of like an administrator or whatever, and then does art on the side now, which I find interesting. So I think one of the central themes of this show is really just talking about how to make it, how to progress. So all of that background about my family and setup is really for this question. And it's, you know, how do you stay relevant in what you're doing? How do you maintain a job doing this? And then you talked about, you know, sort of representing the indie thing. And I mean, how do you get to that $100 million feature? I mean, how does that happen in your world?
You know, I feel like it's honestly just paying your dues, and it's, you know, it's luck, honestly. I mean, I went to UCLA for grad school, and while I was at UCLA, I made some connections, like producers and the producing program and this and that, who after I graduated, I was able to collaborate with. And so then from there, they referred me to other people who referred me to other people. And like, you know, I think the way that I've been able to stay relevant and work as much as I do is by having a good attitude and staying on budget. I mean, I'm good at what I do. I'm going to say that because I'm proud of myself.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I'm good at what I do, but I stay on budget and I have a good attitude. I get along well with people, actors, producers. I'm a good collaborator. So I have been lucky in that I haven't had to seek out work as much, whereas most of my work is on referral, which is really great. Up until like a few years ago where I got an agent. So they also helped find me jobs as well. And I think in order to get to the next level, which I'm trying my damnedest to get to those bigger budgets, it's really about like maybe one of your indies hitting. So like being big on this film festival circuit, going to Sundance or Tribeca or whatever, and getting a lot of buzz. It's just really, but more so, it's like really just who you know, you know? So we're just working on it. I mean, one of these days it's going to happen.
So how much better is the top costume designer from somebody coming out of school? I mean, what's the differences? What is somebody with 20 years experience? I mean, what does that give you in your line, I guess?
I mean, basically by the time you've been working 20 years, you've pretty much seen everything. You also have like a wide net of different connections with vendors, with people that work under you as far as like your team. I mean, literally, like I'm a completely different designer, I'd say, from when I first started. You know, I look at some of my early projects and I was like, oof. You know, I mean, experience, it's just experience. You know, the more you do, the more, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's just experience. Basically, like, that's, you know, the more you do, the better you're going to do. And it's like, you're just going to, it's like a fine wine. You
know? That's so interesting.
It's like, it's been sitting there for a while, it ages, it just gets better. You know what I mean? So,
you know, that takes me right back to the first minute of this, because again, that description, it's so perfect. And it's, I mean, on surface level, it just makes all the sense in the world. But it's like, you know, for me, let's say as a camera operator, right? Mm-hmm. I can look at a shot that I did 10 years ago and say like, oh God, that was awful. The framing was bad. The lighting, you know, I should have thought through that better. Hands are shaky, this, that, whatever it is, you know, or lighting, I could have lit that better. It's so interesting to think like, oh, I could have dressed that person better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I just go, wow. I mean, it's so, beyond, you know, anything that I could imagine. And of course, I've been in the position directing small projects. As a director, you're also the costume designer because it's I had a great experience. I actually went to be an extra on a show that I liked, Billions, season 3 coming out. Catch me in episode 1. And it was interesting. There were 300 extras the day that that I did it, and they had me change 3 times as an extra. And I couldn't believe it. And I mean, it was like this suit we were playing. I was playing an attorney, and they said the suit's like, it's too nice for an attorney. It's too stylish. And so let's change that. No, I don't like it. Change back. Okay, let's change the tie. And it was just interesting to see that, where part of you goes like, like, no, who's even going to see me, you know? But it was really eye-opening to have. And by the way, that's why I do that kind of thing, like take an extra project like that to go work on, you know, a big budget show on a network, something that I can, so I can kind of wrap my hands around more production stuff and bigger, and just kind of, you know, see that. And that's really cool. Advice to somebody who wants to do what you do. Where do you start? Where do you go? Is it about school? I mean, what's, you know, I'm a high school kid. I love television and film. I have a knack for art. I love fashion. I mean, is that, who's this job for? What do you do? How do you get in?
I mean, going to school was my path, and I think it's very valuable just because it hones in on your artistic, you know, you have to take art classes, you have to take history classes. Like, it's all the stuff that kind of like builds you, like gets you ready to go out there. We also had a really great class called Costume Design and Film and Television, where we had designers come in and kind of go over like the programs that they use to break things down. And like, I mean, that stuff is very invaluable to me. So I loved getting a master's degree in costume design. I think it helped out a lot. It made me, network, get some connections, so I was more prepared out in the real world. But I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, I feel like people who want to do this or pursue this freelance life, it's like, you know, you have to love it. You really have to love what you do. You have to be persistent. You can't be afraid of failure, because you will fail. You know, you're not always going to get the job you go up for, but you can't give up. And it's just like it is. It's about being persistent and going after what you want and doing it with a smile on your face and hopefully being on budget. So that's my advice for somebody wanting to get into it. But I mean, you know, hone your skills. If you're good at art, be good at art. Like, know the films that you love and what inspires you, and just have a love for your craft, basically. That's what's going to get you ahead.
I love it. I think the more of these that I'm going to do, the more people I talk to, the more similar I realize that the differences are, you know, kind of across fields. So that was cool. This was fun. Thanks, Samantha.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay.
And hopefully you'll get to dress one of my projects in the near future.
Hey, I would be honored to do that for
you. Amazing. All right, I'll catch you soon.
All right, thanks, Jay.
That is it. A huge thank you to Samantha. She was awesome. Appreciate her coming on. I think I have a little bit more of an understanding of how this works. And really, ultimately, you just got to chase your dreams. That's what it comes down to, no matter what your path is. And just go after it. So until next time, where we bring on another artist in this wide world of television, film, and media, make sure to check out jasonaron.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Google Play. I will see ya when I see ya. Adios.
Thanks for listening. The Manifest is now closed. Find us on iTunes or visit jasonaron.com for more. Bye-bye.